Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 13th. Firefighters' retirement fund saga lingers. State official says Midland Firefighters Fund leader should resign. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The vice chair of the Texas Pension Review Board called on Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund board member David Stacy to resign his position as the best way he could serve fellow firefighters and the city of Midland. The request this past week was the latest in the saga concerning the retirement fund that reports have stated, quote, is currently projected to run out of assets in 22 years, end quote. Stacy and other fund officials went before the board this past week. They again received criticism for their lack of activity in turning around investment, governance, and transparency practices. State officials listed a number of required documents that the fund had failed to produce or took more than a year to turn over. In April, the Midland City Council had selected a firm to perform a forensic audit of the Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund. The results of that audit are expected in the coming weeks. City officials, including Mayor Patrick Payton, told the board members of the Texas Pension Review last week that getting the five-person MFRRF board to vote to participate in the audit was a harder lift. Morris Williams, deputy city manager of the City of Midland, said city administration had taken steps to put the fund in better shape for a turnaround, including working to reduce OT, modifying one-time merit payments, and increasing the city's contribution rate into the fund. The city also sponsored an actuary review and sponsored a forensic audit, according to Williams. Quote, we are committed to this fund, Williams said. The firefighters are my co-workers. I want them to be assured they will have their retirement, end quote. When Stacy went before the board, the exchanges were similar to a meeting in the fall of 2021. This time, however, Keith Brainerd, vice chair of the Texas Pension Review Board, offered the following comments to Stacy. Quote, considering, Mr. Stacy, that you have served on the Midland Pension Board for the better part of 30 years, and by all appearances and accounts, you have been the board's leading force and primary decision maker, Brainerd said. Continuing the quote, in light of the board's repeated failure to follow state law by submitting basic documentation regarding the fund's activity, status, and plans to ensure promised benefits can be paid, and in light also of the plan's abysmal funding condition brought about largely by an ill-advised and expensive funding strategy resulting in inexcusably poor investment returns that cost Midland taxpayers and firefighters millions of dollars in foregone investment earnings, I believe that you are not a help in the important process in bringing about the changes needed to put the Midland Fire Pension Fund back on track. Mr. Stacy, in my view, if your primary interest is your fellow firefighters, the best way you can serve them and the city of Midland would be to immediately resign your position. End quote. That ended the meeting. Stacy is one of five members of the board, which includes three firefighters and two city officials. It was reported that not only will the forensic audit be completed, but city officials told the Reporter Telegram that Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund elections are set to take place in December. In October 2021, the Texas Pension Review Board called for the forensic audit. An intensive actuarial review found that the Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund, quote, is currently projected to run out of assets in 22 years, end quote. A report from last year showed five key findings. Midland Fire lacks fundamental governance practices to administer its investment program, including portfolio monitoring and defining roles and responsibilities. Transparency and accuracy concerned with Midland Fire's investment program limit members' and stakeholders' abilities to evaluate their benefit security. Over the last decade, the fund's investments have underperformed their assumed rate of return by more than 2%. Among the highest in the state, Midland Fire's investment expenses have grown considerably since 2013, and the fund has no fee monitoring process. Midland Fire's asset allocation appears to be a poor fit for their size and liability constraint. Midland Fire faces significant risk of near-term exhaustion. Quote, between 2000 and 2019, the fund went from a stable funded ratio of 93.7% to 51.1%, according to the intensive actuarial review. Quote, investment underperformance was the primary contributor to an increase in unfunded actuarial accrued liability, since investments have underperformed their assumed rate of return of 7.5% by more than 2%, only achieving a 10-year compounded return of 5.1% over the last decade, despite a strong bull market during that same period. Quote, inadequate contributions and assumption changes also exacerbated the UAAL increase, since the reliance on investment returns to pay benefits increases as the funded ratio declines, which compounds the negative effects of underperforming assets. End quote. Quote, I disagreed with recommendation of PRB. Still do, Stacy said. Quote, when asked about the forensic and governance audits, I knew the resources it was going to take to produce this and the time and effort it would be required to produce this. I was familiar with that process, and based on a risk-reward analysis, in my opinion, simply in my opinion as a trustee and a fiduciary to the plan, it was my opinion it would not serve positive result product. End quote. Board member James Martin told the board last week that after missing meetings because of health reasons, he voted yes to do the forensic audit to move forward and move past this. Midland GOP says Texas to stay red. Republican leaders think economy, inflation, oil give GOP advantage in November. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland Republicans shared their thoughts on the upcoming November 8th state elections Tuesday following the Midland County Republican Women's Monthly Luncheon. Rhonda Lacey, former president of the MCRW, said she's optimistic that Republicans will be successful this election cycle. She said the poor economy and high inflation are main reasons as to why she anticipates success for Republicans and state elections throughout Texas, a state that has seen predominantly Republican political leaders for nearly the last 30 years. Quote, what they're, meaning Democrats, doing to the oil and gas industry, she also added, I mean, Texas knows, and most Texans do know, that it takes the oil and gas industry to really keep us going, end quote. MCRW President Judy Cannon echoed Lacey, saying that a lot has happened since Biden has entered office that negatively impacted the U.S. economy and raised inflation. In 2018, current Democrat candidate for Texas Governor Beto O'Rourke faced Ted Cruz in the Texas Senate election. Cruz won by 2% of the vote, or about 200,000 votes. Real Clear Politics shows incumbent Governor Greg Abbott leading O'Rourke by 7% to 11% of the vote in polls of likely voters. Cannon stated the lead is because O'Rourke's beliefs are in stark contrast to most Texans. Midland County is a Republican stronghold. In 2018, Abbott collected 79% of the vote against Democrat Lupe Valdez and Libertarian Mark J. Tippetts. O'Rourke managed 22% inside Midland County in his race versus Cruz in 2018. Midland County Young Republican Vice Chair Cole Harrison commented that although Republicans are confident that the outcome of the upcoming elections will be in their favor, it is important for Republicans to get out and vote. Quote, as people continue to move into Texas, we're seeing that the Republican turnout gap continues to narrow, he said. I think it's important that Republicans especially turn out to vote and not take it for granted, end quote. Early voting for local and state elections begins on October 24th. Election day is November 8th. Craddock sees weatherization efforts firsthand. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Winter is approaching as the Railroad Commission is in the midst of implementing its new weatherization rules. Commissioner Christy Craddock visited her native Midland for a firsthand look at how companies are preparing their facilities for severe weather, whether hot or cold. Quote, this is to educate me and help educate the general public, she said at Oventift USA's office near Midland International Airport, as she prepared to tour the company's facilities. She said she also wanted to see where companies continue to improve their weatherization efforts and to better understand the work that goes into implementing the Commission's rules put in place after Winter Storm Uri in February 2021. Quote, where we are today as an agency is we are in the process of taking comments on Rule 65 regarding designation of critical natural gas infrastructure and the new proposed rules, Craddock said. The result should be to ensure smaller operators who don't really need to be online to begin with aren't negatively impacted, she said. One size doesn't fit all, she said. She predicted some of the concerns about critical infrastructure, quote, falling through the cracks, unquote, would resolve themselves as the rules are implemented. Craddock pointed out that it has been less than 2 years since the winter storm, a relatively short time frame to devise and begin implementing new rules. Another priority for the agency will be inspections, she said. Quote, high-volume gas producer, we're coming to you because we want to make sure you remain online, she said. The agency has already hired 100 new inspectors who are undergoing training with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and some who will undergo weatherization-specific training. Aaron Johnson, vice president and general manager with Oventiv, told Craddock company officials are already meeting with commission inspectors and building relationships with them. He added that the company is also developing checklists of its facilities, what components are being weatherized, and how. Quote, that will go a long way toward understanding what's been winterized, he said. Mike Schubert, senior manager, Permian Production with Oventiv, noted the company's operations are located in wildly varying temperatures, with the high temperatures in its Dawson Creek Montney play in Canada equal to the low temperatures in its Permian Basin operations. The company's weatherization efforts are site-specific, he told Craddock, showing employee-taken photos of snow, tornadoes, sandstorms, and flooding just in the Permian Basin. During Winter Storm Uri, he continued, the company found its winterization preparations paid off with minimal disruption. The company also found opportunities for additional site-specific weatherization, he said. Ensuring the state's energy producers and its grid are better prepared for severe weather is an ongoing process, Craddock said. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 13th. Bob Wayne Dutton, age 75, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, October 8th. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, October 14th at 2 p.m. at First Methodist Church in Midland. He was born in Borger, Texas on March 12, 1947 to Bob and Mary Dutton. He attended Borger schools. Bob served in the U.S. Army as a Vietnamese linguist. He was attached to the 101st Airborne in Vietnam. Bob contributed to his community by serving on various community boards. While living in Odessa, he was named Outstanding Young Man by the Odessa JCs. He was a founding member of the Midland Rape Crisis Board. He also served on the Spectrum of Solutions Board, formerly known as MARC. In 1978, Bob opened Bob Dutton CPA. The firm was started with himself and his longtime assistant, Jeanette Pulse, and it grew and became Dutton Harrison Company, employing over 30 people. Bob was preceded in death by his parents, Mary and Bob Dutton, and by his younger sister, Becky Groover. He is survived by Letty Dutton, his wife of 54 years. He is also survived by his daughters, Robin Cookston of San Francisco and Laura Weber of Austin, his brother, Richard Dutton of Palestine, Texas, his brother-in-law, Davis Griver of Littlefield, Texas, his brother-in-law, Wayne Ingram of Kenyon, Texas, as well as several grandchildren. If you would like to honor Bob's memory, the family suggests the West Texas Food Bank, Habitat for Humanity, or First Methodist Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Randall Warren Black, age 68, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, October 9th. Randy was born December 20, 1953, in Vernon, Texas, to Raymond and Bernice Black. He graduated from Midland Senior High School in 1972, then went on to attend Tarleton State College. He married Pamela Behrens on January 12, 1974. He began working for Texas Electric in 1979 as a lineman. He retired with them in 2012. Randy was preceded in death by his parents, Raymond and Bernice Black. He is survived by his wife, Pam Black, daughter Stephanie and husband Patrick, daughter Christina and husband Brad, son Sammy and wife Danielle, as well as several grandchildren. A public visitation for Randall will be held Thursday, October 13th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A funeral service will occur Friday, October 14th at 12 p.m., 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Burial will occur Friday, October 14th at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Black family. William Bill Dennis Chering, age 60, of Midland, passed away on October 10th. He was born on September 24, 1962, in Bridgeport, Connecticut, to Robert and Judith Chering. Bill was raised in Midland, where he graduated from Robert E. Lee High School. After high school, Bill enlisted in the Army. Later, he established a career in the flooring business, owning and operating Action Discount Carpet for many years. On August 13, 2002, he married Denise. Bill was preceded in death by his brother, Patrick Chering. He is survived by his parents, Bob and Judy Chering, his wife, Denise, his three daughters, Charity Chering, Angie Bohannon, and Tabitha Pitts, as well as 10 grandchildren. Visitation will be from 1 to 9 p.m. Thursday, October 13th, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Friday, October 14th, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland. Viewing with the family will be Thursday, October 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. Funeral service will be held at 5 p.m. Friday, October 14th, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Daniel Gonzalez, age 56, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, October 11th in Midland. Services are pending at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hortensia Estrada of Midland died on October 8th in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe on Saturday, October 15th at 11 a.m. with Father David officiating. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Johnny Doc Hodge, age 75, of Mesquite, Texas, passed away on October 1st. Visitation will be on Friday, October 14th, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, October 15th, at 1 p.m. at Lighthouse Pentecostal. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, October 13th. First responder raises on hold for now. The Odessa City Council instructed a consulting company Tuesday evening to figure out exactly how much it would cost the city to pay its public safety employees as though it was competing with the top third or top quarter of its peers. Mark Holcomb, a consultant with Evergreen Solutions, said preliminary numbers suggest the city would have to cough up an extra $2.5 million to $2.75 million a year. If the council would like to compete with the top third of public safety agencies, and up to $6 million if the council wants to compete with the top quarter. The city has 504 budgeted firefighters, police officers, and dispatchers, accounting for nearly half of the city's overall budgeted positions of 1,085. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services, Cindy Muncie, said, "No decision will be made about how competitive the city wants to be with other cities when it comes to the rest of the city's employees until Evergreen finishes gathering data about that group," said City Manager Michael Marrero. Holcomb said he expects that to be within the next 2 or 3 months. Muncie told the council Holcomb's public safety figures do not take into consideration the increased cost the city would have to cover in terms of pensions and other benefits. For example, the city pays 28% of every firefighter's salary into their pension fund. Muncie and Marrero said any raises would have to come from excess sales tax revenue. This fiscal year's sales tax revenue has been projected at $45 million, and nearly all of it has already been accounted for, Muncie said. While council member Denise Swanner has suggested $14 million in American Rescue Plan Act funding could pay for a few years' worth of raises for public safety employees, it's not clear if the city would be allowed to use ARPA funds for those purposes. And even if allowed, they certainly couldn't be used for regular city employees, Muncie said following the meeting. Back in July, the council voted unanimously to hire an outside firm to look at all city employees' pay in comparison with other communities, but asked Evergreen Solutions to place a rush on first responders' pay because Odessa Fire Rescue is losing firefighters at a rapid rate, and some attribute it to poor pay. In fact, during the council meeting September 27th, Mayor Javier Hoven, Swanner, and council member Mark Mata voted to give OFR raises before getting the results of the Evergreen study. The measure failed by a 4-3 vote. Swanner said again Tuesday night she was ready to give OFR employees an immediate raise. "We can spend $10 million out of general funds on a road project, but we can't give these guys more money. That makes no sense at all," Swanner said. Council member Mary Willis said she hates that the OFR has lost more than 30 firefighters, but the city council must go through a process. 2 weeks ago, she was asked to vote for specific raises for OFR employees, but that's not how it's done, Willis said. "The council has to know where the money is going to come from first, and the entire council voted for the Evergreen study," she said. Somebody said on the Odessa Accountability Project, "Did you look them in the face and tell them you want to do more? And I am looking them in the face and telling them, I get it. I want you to have more. I want you to get what you deserve." So the answer to that question is yes. I am looking them in the face, and yes, I am looking them in the eye. I do get it, and I do want it, but there has to be a process, Willis said. Holcomb told the council his company has collected data on agencies that have already poached OFR members, and the fire department is still competing with when it comes to recruitment, Holcomb said. It's also collected information on agencies that are similar to public safety agencies in terms of services offered, size, budgets, and job descriptions. But Holcomb said the city council needed to decide if they wanted to offer average pay or be more competitive when it comes to public safety employees and general government employees. He also asked the council to decide if they want to make changes merely to salaries, but benefits as well. Holcomb said the city will have to determine at a later point if it wants to change how it implements step increases. Right now, the city provides step increases every 2 years, but other cities provide step increases every year. Along with that, Holcomb said, the city will need to address the issue of compression. In other words, ensuring newer, less experienced employees don't end up earning more than experienced long-term employees. All of the council members agreed they wanted to see figures as though the city were paying in the top 66th or 75th percentile for first responders. They also agreed they wanted to keep benefits and supplemental pay at the same rate, which Holcomb said is actually already higher than many cities included in their data collection process. Evergreen, which was paid $111,500 for the report, provided the council the estimated populations and per capita income for 19 Texas cities and Ector County. Evergreen will have final cost figures for the city's public safety employees within 2 or 3 weeks, Holcomb said. In other matters, the city agreed to enter a $0 lease agreement with the Black Cultural Council of Odessa for the Gertrude Bruce Historical Cultural Center, 1020 East Murphy Street. According to city documents, the Cultural Council will be solely responsible for the building's maintenance, repair, and operation expenses and would have to carry insurance. The council also met in executive session to discuss the annual evaluation of City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo, City Attorney Natasha Brooks, and Marrero. The council adjourned for the night after coming out of executive session without taking any action. Board decides to move forward on bond process. After reviewing why the $398,255,000 May 7th bond failed, Ector County ISD board members reached a consensus to move forward on a new possible bond. There will be no timeline, amount, or idea of what should be built yet. trustees asked Superintendent Scott Murray to give them proposals on a bond timeline, a proposal for a bond committee structure, and help establish listening opportunities for trustees to talk with staff members and parents. Murray said he will heavily rely on trustees for names of committee members. He was also supportive of actively listening to the community, as he did when he first arrived, and conducted a look, listen, and learn tour. Trustees discussed voter apathy, low voter turnout, and that ECISD and parents did not vote in May. Murray said the people that voted, 8% were parents of ECISD students, so our parents did not make a decision about their own children. 9% of voters were employees. Less than half of our employees in our county are registered to vote. Some don't live in the county, so we certainly have to pay attention to that, Murray said. Board member Tammy Hawkins said she would like board members to talk to small groups to get them involved. Trustee Donna Smith said the needs are not going away and they're not getting less expensive. She has talked to people who voted against it and they agreed. I do think we need to try again, Smith said. She'd like to see what they are going to do differently this next time. We're getting conflicting information on why it failed, Smith said. She added that the East Side, West Side division has to be paid attention to, Smith said following board member Delma Avalos' comment about poor customer service at ECISD. It feels like we need to do a better job about taking people's concerns seriously. Board Secretary Chris Stanley said he and his wife moved to Odessa 30 years ago. I've never moved to a town before that had such self-loathing, Stanley said. He said it made no sense to him why people lived in a town they don't love and that they made fun of it. At that point, he said he decided to do something to change that. I am perplexed by other people that don't feel the same about their community, Stanley said. He added that getting involved is never pretty work. You don't get awards for it, credit for it. The problem is, there seemed to be this disconnect between our wants and our needs, and it breaks down across all kinds of lines, Stanley said. I think we need to work fundamentally to try to figure out what our vision is for Odessa and think about what the city is going to look like in the 22nd and 23rd century, Stanley said. Trustee Carol Gregg said it's hard for her to say at this point why the bond failed. At this point, I don't think the problem is per se in our community. I think it's a problem in our state and nation. There's a lot of negativity, Greg said. When it comes to trusting the people who run institutions and paying those people, the community didn't want to pay the price. Smith said she feels like kids need to be convinced so they can influence their parents. I'm a West Sider. I'm an OHS graduate. I wanted to put in the West Side and South Side. There were excellent reasons for not doing it. I want there to be serious conversation about that. There needs to be serious conversation about getting people registered and getting people to vote. We lost because hardly anybody voted, Smith said. Board President Steve Brown said he is a native Odessan who went to Odessa High School. He has three brothers who also went to OHS. His mom was a housewife and his father was a firefighter who had an off-duty job. The philosophy at home, he said, was to contribute to the community and vote for bonds. Brown said if you look at schools in terms of violence and avoidance of schools, you can attribute that to overcrowding conditions, particularly at the high schools. For many people, Brown said, crowds are not their friends. The May bond was in two separate propositions. This came in response to recommendations from a community bond committee that worked for 6 months evaluating the conditions of all ECISD facilities. In January, members of that community bond committee presented their findings to trustees, identifying four main areas of focus. The district's website said, the school board used those recommendations in shaping its decision to move forward with a bond election. The proposed bond projects included Proposition A, $215,255,000 that would include maintenance and lifecycle repairs, replacement for school district buildings, $130,255,000, various projects for electrical, mechanical, plumbing, fire and life safety, and others at schools and auxiliary buildings. Construction of a new career and technical education CTE center, $70 million. Classroom and lab space for programs like welding, construction, health science, automation, and process technology, HVAC, plumbing, and others, estimated at 150,000 square feet. This would have included furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Classroom technology upgrades, $15 million. Classroom and or campus audio, visual, and multimedia refresh or additions. Proposition B, $183 million for a new comprehensive high school. This would have included construction of a new high school designed for 2,500 to 2,800 student capacity, estimated at 400,000 square feet. It would have included furniture, fixtures, and equipment. District leaders anticipated the bond would create a tax rate increase of 15 cents and for a home with a taxable value of $100,000 would equate to a tax increase of approximately $12 per month, the website said. There would be no tax increase on residence homesteads for taxpayers 65 and older, as state law dictates that the tax rate and the amount paid on a residence are frozen when the person turns 65 years old, applies for the exemption, and is approved by the Ector County Appraisal District. ECISD gives local taxpayers a 20% homestead exemption. In his opening remarks, Murray congratulated the school board as well as 4,200 members of Team ECISD for receiving the 2022 Outstanding School District Award from the Mexican American School Boards Association. Trustees attended the award ceremony at MASBA's annual conference this past weekend. In other discussion, trustees received a report using beginning of year assessment data. This item gave school board members a look at where MAP, Measure of Academic Progress Growth, stands today when compared to scores from the fall semester of 2022. The results showed above projected growth in many of the areas tested. Trustees also looked at how this assessment connects the projections for STAR test performance. If the STAR was taken right now, ECISD gives the MAP assessment multiple times each year, September, January, April, and then in June after summer learning, in order to measure student growth from the beginning of the school year through the end of the year, the recap said. STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math is a priority for ECISD. In this update, trustees learned this year's work is heavily focused on strengthening teachers' understanding of best practices, leveling up. Looking at student data from the 2021-22 school year shows improvement across the board. MAP, math scores, all grade levels, K through 8 met expected growth projections. STAR math data, grades 3 through 5, 8 and 9 measures showed growth. Grades 6 through 8, 8 and 9 measures showed growth, while 1 remained the same, and in Algebra 1, all 3 measures increased. Looking at the science results using MAP, grades 3, 4, 5, 7, and 8 met or exceeded growth projections. STAR science for 5th and 8th grades showed growth in 6 of 6 measures, and STAR biology showed growth in all 3 measures. As teachers become better and better at teaching math and science, students' results will increase. Computer science is a strategic area of emphasis for the school district as it prepares students for any number of future endeavors. Statistics show 67% of all new jobs in STEM are in computing. Just 10% of STEM graduates are in computer science. In just the last 2 weeks, ECISD announced a $1 million partnership with the Permian Strategic Partnership and the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation to put STEM centers in 28 elementary schools. A grant from Boot Up and Amazon Future Engineer to pay for resources and professional development for computer science teachers, and a donation from Encore for STEM education. This supports what parents are saying. 90% want their children to study computer science, however, just 45% of high school teaches it. ECISD is building a reliable K-12 pipeline of computer sciences classes for students from kindergarten through 12th grade, the recap said. Trustees heard the annual performance update on district partnerships developed through Senate Bill 1882, the review of the 2021-22 academic and financial performance is focused on the agreed-upon goals with Odessa Family YMCA and Third Future Schools, which operates Ector College Prep Middle School. The STEM Academy at UTPB is also an SB 1882 partnership, but it began this year, so there is no performance to review yet. SB 1882 came from the 2017 legislative session and provides benefits for districts to contract with education partners to promote innovation and improve student outcomes. The district partners manages the school and is responsible for outcomes and has autonomy over personnel, curriculum, calendar, assessments, and budget. The district holds partners accountable through a performance contract. The YMCA hosts 3-year-old pre-kindergarten classes. Key measures of phonological awareness, plus 13%, mathematics, plus 14%, and family school connectedness, plus 6%, all exceeded first-year goals, and enrollment has already increased from 115 students in 2021-22 to more than 200 this year, with afternoon classes adding to the morning classes offered last year. At Ector College Prep, the school's STAR accountability score jumped from 58 to 86, an F to a B, due to student growth. Math and reading scores increased substantially in 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. ECISD has 3-year agreements in place with its SB 1882 partners and is in year 2 with both the YMCA and Third Future Schools, the recap said. Quick hits. Golf tournament. Roseland Oil and Gas will present a golf tournament at 8 a.m. today at Ratliff Ranch, 7500 North Grandview Avenue. Sign up for the 4-man teams and hole sponsors. Event sponsorships are also available. To register, call 903-787-7544 or visit tinyurl.com/2BW3J7R9. Texas Size Garage Sale. Senior Life Midland has announced the 33rd annual Texas Size Garage Sale from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. today at the warehouse at 407 East Scarborough Drive, Midland. All proceeds will benefit Meals on Wheels. Visit tinyurl.com/5N7M49HE. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix Therapy Dog Loves to Hear Stories from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays through October 27th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Chuckers for Children. Bynum School has scheduled the Chuckers for Children event from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. today at the Midland Polo Club, 5401 Polo Club Road, Midland. There will be a polo match, dinner, auction, and entertainment. For more information, call 432-520-0075 or email chuckers@bynumschool.org. A Better Way Forward meeting. Commissioner Mike Gardner, Ector County Precinct 1, has scheduled an ECISD Bond Initiative meeting at 6 p.m. today, 15837 U.S. Highway 385. For updates, text Gardner at 22828 or call 432-498-4001. OC Noche de Arte, Odessa College 201 West University Boulevard has scheduled a Latinx art show from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. Come enjoy art, free food, music, and activities. Bring your friends and family. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/bddzkzw. Voyager Quilt Class. Wooden Spool Boutique, 1601 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a beginner's quilting class from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. today. Participants will learn how to complete partial seams to make stunning blocks. Admission is $25. Visit tinyurl.com/tszd4p72. Odessa College Art Exhibit. The Midland College McCormick Gallery, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland, will present works by local artists during the Fall 2022 Midland Arts Association Juried Exhibition from today through November 11th. An opening reception and awards presentation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. Admission is free. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/2k75UU. 2R. Midlander indicted on felony charges. A Midland man has had a rough few weeks. According to court and police documents, he was indicted on 3 felony charges September 19th, and he was both choked and arrested Sunday morning while at his new girlfriend's apartment. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received several calls about a disturbance at the Vera Apartments on East Highway 191 around 6 a.m. Sunday, and dispatchers told officers they heard a woman screaming, "Get out!" on the calls. When officers arrived, Anthony Mejia, 20, admitted he'd pushed his former girlfriend out of the way to get into her apartment after seeing Isaac Mancha, 20, inside, the report stated. Mejia further admitted he'd assaulted Mancha and placed him in a chokehold while officers were still there. People told them a man was running and vomiting. When officers found the man, it was Mancha, who said he'd been attacked by Mejia while he was sleeping, the report stated. According to the report, Mancha smelled strongly of marijuana, and he admitted that he had marijuana in his pocket. Officers found less than 2 ounces in his pocket, the report stated. The woman in the apartment told police Mejia not only pushed her, but he twisted her hand, injuring a finger, according to the report. She also said Mejia choked Mancha, causing Mancha's face to turn purple. Mejia was arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of burglary of a habitation with the intent to commit a felony, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. Mancha was arrested on suspicion of possession of marijuana, a Class B misdemeanor in connection with the incident. According to online Ector County District Court records, Mancha was indicted September 19th on 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a felony 2 offense, punishable by a prison term of 2 to 20 years. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the woman said she and her younger brother went to a residence on South Tom Green on April 7th to get her daughter, and there was a disturbance during which Mancha, her daughter's father, threatened to shoot her. As she drove away, the woman said she heard 3 shots. The woman's brother also told police he had seen Mancha retrieve a gun from his Ford Explorer prior to the shooting, according to the report. Officers found 3 .45 caliber cartridge casings at the scene and a bullet defect in a house across the street from Mancha's, the report stated. Mancha was released from jail in that case April 22nd after posting surety bonds totaling $150,000. Local news roundup. Odessan accused of ramming car. A 28-year-old woman accused of purposefully ramming another woman's car in May was arrested recently on suspicion of aggravated criminal mischief. According to Ector County court records, Ector County Sheriff's deputies received a call about a disturbance in the 11,000 block of West 64th Street on May 26. When deputies arrived, a man and woman told them Arsena Hernandez arrived at the residence, confronted them, and then intentionally hit a Kia Sportage XL owned by the woman, causing nearly $3,200 in damage to the driver's side wheel, axle, and driver's side bumper. Hernandez was identified as the former girlfriend of the man, according to the report. The pair told deputies Hernandez agreed to pay for the damages, but hasn't done so as of September 9th. The report stated the warrant was issued for Hernandez and she was arrested October 5th. She was released from the Ector County Jail October 7th after posting a $2,500 surety bond. Criminal mischief is a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. Man accused of forgery. A 33-year-old man who had a legitimate 30-day permit for his Volkswagen Jetta was arrested Tuesday morning after an Odessa police officer observed a fake temporary tag on the car. According to the Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled over a 2002 Volkswagen Jetta around 10 a.m. Tuesday in the 2300 block of Field Street after noticing the buyer's tag on the car didn't have a valid state seal on it and the letter in the tag wasn't in its correct position. When the officer ran the tag, he was told the tag came back to a 2007 Toyota Prius 4H, the report stated. The driver of the car, Francisco Javier Vega Montezuma, gave the officer fake documents indicating he'd bought the car on September 3rd, according to the report. The officer indicated in his report that people sometimes use fictitious tags to mask the identity of vehicles for robberies, thefts, burglaries, stolen vehicles, salvage titles, avoid tolls, vehicle that can't pass inspection, and vehicles that are uninsured. While Vega Montezuma's car was being inventoried, the officer found a legitimate Texas 30-day permit receipt dated August 5th, indicating he was issued a permit prior to displaying the fake temporary tag, the report stated. Vega Montezuma was arrested on suspicion of forgery of a governmental document, a third-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He remains in the Ector County Jail on an immigration and customs enforcement hold and a $5,000 surety bond. MPD officer arrested. A male officer with the Midland Police Department was arrested on October 8th regarding assault family violence involving an adult male family member. The arrest occurred in Tarrant County, a news release said. The officer was placed on administrative leave pending the outcome of an internal investigation. For locations to get traffic signals, a project to install traffic signals at 4 locations in the Odessa district is starting this month. Much of the work in the initial stages will have minimum impact on traffic. Vega Underground Utilities Incorporated of Houston won the project with a low bid of a little more than $1.35 million. Traffic signals will be placed at the following intersections: Business Interstate 20 and West Loop 338 on the west side of Odessa in Ector County, Highway 349 and County Road 140 about 3 miles south of Interstate 20 in Midland County, U.S. Highway 285 and FM 1216 about a half mile north of BI-20 in Pecos and Reeves County, Highway 302 and County Road 313 on the east side of Kermit in Winkler County. The signal projects are being done to improve safety. Lane closures will be required at times for work to be done. Work is starting in the Odessa and Midland locations. The project is expected to take about 6 months to complete all four locations with signal poles on order. The project may be suspended at one point if poles are not on hand yet. TxDOT has requested work to begin now so the project can be completed as soon as possible. Motorists are asked to slow down when driving in work zones. Motorists are also reminded that state law requires them to obey any warning signals, flaggers, and pilot cars encountered in the work zone. TxDOT wants everyone, motorists, contractor, employees, and TxDOT staff, to go home safely every day. Local and state news roundup. Adenvita sets bingo bash. Adenvita Private School will host the second Halloween bingo bash from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. October 21st at the Premier Ballroom, 6482 West University Boulevard in Odessa. It promises to be a Friday night full of games, prizes, drinks, food, and fun. Bingo packages available for sale, $25 each, or individual bingo cards and daubers. White House burger plates, $12, raffles, and open bar. Sponsorships are available at adenvita.square.site. 2022 Walk to End Alzheimer's Set. The 2022 Walk to End Alzheimer's will be Saturday at Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive in Midland. The event opens at 9 a.m. The opening ceremony is at 10 a.m. and the walk begins at 10:30 a.m. On walk day, participants honor those affected by Alzheimer's with the Poignant Promise Garden Ceremony. While plans are moving forward to host Permian Basin Walk in person, the health and safety of participants, staff, and volunteers remain the top priorities. The Alzheimer's Association will continue to closely monitor CDC state and local guidelines to ensure walk events adhere to the latest recommendations. For more information and to register, visit alz.org/walk. SOS 101. Voting by mail in Texas. On Wednesday, Texas Secretary of State John Scott released the third installment of SOS 101, a series of educational videos on the voting process in Texas ahead of the November 8th general election. In the new video, Scott provides an overview of voting by mail in Texas, including who is eligible to cast a vote by mail, ID requirements for voting by mail, and how county officials work to protect the security and integrity of mail ballot cast in an election. Scott also visits with Parker County Elections Administrator Cricket Miller, who provides a step-by-step account of the mail ballot process at the county level and offers helpful tips for Texas mail voters. The video can be seen at tinyurl.com/Y6J85NHD. Texas voters who are eligible to vote by mail must provide a Texas Department of Public Safety issued Texas driver's license, personal ID or election ID certificate number, or two, the last four digits of their Social Security number on both their application for a ballot by mail and mail ballot carrier envelope. As long as one of the ID numbers provided matches what is on the voter's registration record, the voter's AB, BM, and ballot can be accepted. Remember, if you're eligible and planning to vote by mail, you must make sure your application for a ballot by mail is received by Friday, October 28th at your county early voting clerk's office, Scott said in the video. Please take the time to read the instructions your county gives you carefully. Before putting your ballot in the mail, don't forget to provide an ID number under the flap of the carrier envelope to protect the security of your personal information. When in doubt, fill both out. Elections Administrator Cricket Miller recommends in the video, in case you don't remember which number is on your voter registration record, we can use either.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.